Shabbat Shalom. This week, we begin the book of Leviticus. We've gone from the creation of the world to the matriarchs and the patriarchs, from slavery to freedom, the life of Moses, and now the Israelites are wandering in the desert. And what amazing narrative do we have this week? Why don't I let the text speak for itself? We read, "And if the priest's offering for a sacrifice of well-being to God is from the flock, whether a male or a female, he shall offer one without blemish. If he presents a sheep as his offering, he shall bring it before God and lay his hand upon the head of his offering. It shall be slaughtered before the tent of meeting, and Aaron's sons shall dash its blood against all sides of the altar." So what do we do with that? Truth be told, knowing to what to make of an arcane practice is not a modern struggle. For hundreds of years, our sages have wrestled with finding relevance in these passages for the people living in their time, as the practice of sacrifice stopped thousands of years back. This is one of the most transparent examples in which we see adaptability built right into Judaism. One might say Reform Judaism was sown into the very beginnings of Judaism after the destruction of the Second Temple, with the need to pick and choose which laws were still binding and which were no longer relevant, such as these laws about sacrifice. We say that Reform Judaism at its best is informed choice. That is, we are educated as Jews and make decisions based on what resonates for us as true and just. In our daily morning liturgy, we read the following list of mitzvot, of commandments, that help us as a sort of guide to good living. We read, "These are the acts that have no measure: respecting our parents, acting with loving kindness, praying and studying morning and evening, visiting the sick, consoling the bereaved, celebrating with the wedding couple, welcoming guests, making peace between people." But in the end, the rabbis posit that the study of Torah equals them all. Why is this? Because, as we read in the Talmud, study is great, for it leads to action. In other words, if we study Torah and the values and ethics therein, we will be moved to put our understanding into actions of compassion and kindness. While in theory, this sounds really great, we all know that in practice, it's not so simple. It is not easy to be moved to action, not even when we know in every cell of our being that it is the right thing to do. Louis C.K. did a stand-up routine at the Beacon some years ago, in which he talks about how his successful career has allowed him to fly first class. He describes how he boards first and gets to watch the tired and frustrated passengers, and often soldiers, slowly board and take their less comfortable seats in coach. He says, "And every time I see a soldier on a plane, I always think, you know what? I should give him my seat. It would be the right thing to do. It would be easy to do. And it would mean a lot to him, because I'm in first class, and this guy is giving his life for our country. And it's scary, but he's doing it. And he's sitting in the coach seat. I should trade with him." And this is all sounding very nice, but then the punchline comes in, of course, as Louis C.K. continues, "I never have given up my seat. Let me make that clear. I have never done it once. I've had so many opportunities, and I never really seriously came close. And here's the worst part. I still just enjoy the fantasy for myself to enjoy. I was actually proud of myself for having thought it. I was proud. Oh, I am such a sweet man. That is so nice of me to think of doing that. And then totally never do it." Have you had a similar experience to what he described? There is an inherent contradiction that is brought out in this story that seems to me a central issue in Reform Judaism. We choose which rituals we will participate in. We weigh and decide which acts we might do. What has the most meaning and relevance to us? And is it compelling enough to make us follow through and act? Yet, a central tenet in Judaism is that we place higher importance on deed before creed. We need to act because our moral compass has told us that it is the right thing to do. Or put another way, if providing food to the poor was a matter of people being in the mood to do a good deed, a lot of people would go hungry. Doing good in the world is not just about taking action when we are in the mood. Likewise, doing good in the world is not just about making ourselves feel better. It is about understanding that we are all a part of the same family of humanity, and the gifts that we have individually are meant to be shared. It is what Mordechai meant when he gave counsel to a scared and fretful Queen Esther, who was nervous to approach King Ahasuerus and plead the case for the Jews. Reflecting on her raised status and privilege, Mordechai said, "And who knows? Perhaps you have come into this royal existence in this moment in time just for this purpose." I keep thinking about that line from the Book of Esther and how it gives us the question that we should all be asking ourselves. What privilege do we have that we can leverage on behalf of the persecuted and downtrodden? Why have we been given such gifts in our lives, if not to share them? There is a story about the Chafetz Chaim, a famous rabbi from the early 20th century, that I'd like to share with you today. When an American visitor came to his home and he saw how bare his room was, he asked him, "Where's your furniture?" The Chafetz Chaim asked the man, "Where's your furniture?" The American visitor answered, "Furniture? I don't have any here. I'm only a visitor here." But the Chafetz Chaim answered, "I too am a visitor in this world." We too are visitors. We inherit what is given us for a time, and then we pass it on. Kol Yisrael aravim ze bazeh. We are all responsible for one another. Think about the positive changes we could affect were we all to keep that at the forefront of our minds, the kindness that would pour forth, the generosity. When our matriarch Rebecca first met Abraham's servant Eliezer in the desert, she not only noticed that he was thirsty, but she thought of his camels as well. As we know, it takes a great deal of water to quench the thirst of a camel. But Rebecca provided water for Eliezer and his 10 camels. Can you imagine how much work it would have taken for Rebecca to draw up enough pitchers of water from the well to quench this thirst? This is how we do it. We offer each other kindnesses with open hearts and hands, and we care for one another. And there are so many opportunities to do so. Here at Stephen Wise already, many of you participate in helping at our men's shelter and at our emergency food program, and many of you have signed up or will sign up to help out on one of our task forces working on issues around anti-Semitism, the refugee and immigration crisis, and the domestic civil liberties issues that we're all thinking about. There are countless ways to make a difference. We offer what we can, and we share what we can, and we don't know what impact our help is going to have. We water all of the seeds, and we don't know which ones will grow, but we know that some will. We are coming to Passover, a time when we were saved, when our people were redeemed. We meditate on what it was to be in slavery and what it is to be in freedom. And perhaps the biggest lesson in the Passover story comes in these questions, which I conclude tonight by asking. What will we do with our freedom? How will our experience work to make us better people and to make us more compassionate and kinder. Shabbat Shalom.